Star jump sequence terminates, Captain.
Get the gravitational dampers online and open the blast shield.
Aye, sir.
Bring us in closer.
Aye, aye, sir. Moving us in on sublight drive.
Extreme magnification. The center of the galaxy. And there's our black hole.
The experience of a lifetime, Captain.
Let me put this on audio. Should be able to hear the magnetic resonance.
This is it, ladies and gentlemen. The edge of time and space, where the impossible can happen. Welcome to the event horizon.
Good morning, or afternoon, or evening, whatever is relevant for the part of the world you are in. Indeed, welcome to the Event Horizon, where the impossible happens. Join us each week at this time as we delve into the worlds of science fiction, fantasy, and science fact in all their forms. I am your host, Gene Turnbow.
And I am your other host, Susan Fox.
And with us is Gregory A. McMartin, president of Interdimensional Games, IDGI, here to talk to us about Consortium VR's Remastered.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Yes, indeed. Thanks so much. Awesome to be back again.
Yeah, this is your third time on, or your fourth?
Fourth time, I think.
Yeah. The reason is, of course, we have so much fun talking to you. You're a fun guest.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, you're really a fun interviewer, and you know, it's I think we have a lot of things in common. The fact that we both in the game industry in the 90s cements sort of a foundation thing there. I think that that's how you and I connected. Yeah, for sure.
So you're vintage.
Yeah, exactly. We're all vintage. Yes. And I'm sticking to it, you know. I've seen the game industry mutate over the past 20 years. I don't really like the vast majority of where it's gone. I don't like where mobile games have gone. I don't like where AAA games have gone. Now, the indie game scene is pretty amazing. It's with the release, with now that, you know, Unreal's been out for so long now, available to everybody, and it's getting crazy how powerful the tech is. Unreal 5 and even Unity is still being used by tons of people. There's just a lot of creativity, a lot of brand new ideas out there that you know, would never existed 20 years ago. So it's, you know, it's a mixed bag, but
you know, other people can say, you can say to most people, you know, well, if you don't like it, write your own game, but you do.
Yeah exactly. That's right. If you don't like it, write your own game. I remember actually before forming Interdimensional Games early 2000s, and my buddy saying, yeah, you know, I was getting all frustrated and saying, I want to do this, I want to do that. I said, well, just start your own company. I'm like, okay, I'll just do that. And you know, it's a little easier said than done, as you folks will know.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh yeah. An awful lot of the success stories you hear about aren't as successful as it might seem from the outside. It
takes 20 years to have an overnight success.
Yeah. So
at least 10 years since Consortium got started. Damn,
it's
that
a decade.
Was a good segue.
It's a decade. It's a decade. We released a decade ago in January. Yes.
Exactly. I mean, the thing that strikes me is that you were groundbreaking at the time, and you're still groundbreaking now because of the way your game interface works. Nobody else is doing this.
No.
And I cannot figure out why, because the technology has been easily there for a long time.
Yes, it has. Yes. It's because it's so damn new, Gene. Like, it's weird. You know the announced trailer we put out a year ago now, when we first released the early beta version of Consortium VR, right? For early access and stuff. So when we first did that trailer, it has in it me talking and playing the game, right? It's demonstrating the game. So you hear my voice and you hear an NPC respond. It seems like a natural way to, but no, people, it turns out, I know from fact, people thought that was just a voice actor, a bad voice actor, me. Like, that's what you hear in the game. Like, they expected that was showing, like many games do. You just hear a disembodied voice. That's supposed to be the player.
If you
right?
had shown yourself,
like, oh my god, I realized I had horror. They were right. So that trailer probably misled tons of people. And it's like, that horrible voice actor. I don't want to play a game with a horrible voice actor, right? Listen to voice actor.
We can hook you up with some good voice actors.
Ah! Oh, thank you.
That sucks. I mean, it makes sense though, because if they don't see your lips moving, while exactly. you're playing the game.
Exactly. Exactly. You're right.
They don't
you're
realize right. what's
going on. In hindsight,
it's
like, duh, right? In hindsight, I'm like, why didn't I think of that, right? It seems so obvious. But it's because marketing something like this is also new. Like, I'm having to, like, think from scratch, right? How do I even present this to the consumer, to the market, right? It's really quite a puzzle. So anyways, we have a new trailer in development that I'm quite proud of. It's kind of, we brought on a really cool contractor. She's really passionate, and she's brought something uh-huh. cool to the table, and she's basically made a kind of a traditional trailer that I'm really quite proud of. And it has, at the beginning, we fixed that. So basically, we have like a little icon kind of up on the right that makes it look like a streamer icon, right? And it sort of, it has like a little animation when you hear the disembodied voice, and then you see the NPC respond. So now it's much, much clearer that, oh, it's a player. It's like a, it's more ubiquitous, you know, not, it's mimicking the thing you see all over streaming sites where you, the gamer on the bottom right that's playing the game is there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So that's, I feel better about how we're presenting this trailer to the world and how it might be received, I think, this time. Yeah.
So the whole Unity thing is still unfolding. I thought they were hosed, you know, after that.
Well, the problem is there's so many people still using it, like an ungodly number of people still using it. It's still taught in schools everywhere, so it has this sort of momentum, this sort of knowledge base, right? Just uh-huh. sheer number of people that are experts that use it and keep shipping things with it. So that's kind of, it's like a, but yeah, you're right. The corporate side of it is really weird to watch unfold, right? Like it's kind of, because I know personally, I have a nephew, sorry, cousin. I have a cousin who is a genius data analyst guy. He's sort of one of those smart kids that just went off, and he's got hardcore into sort of database programming and such. Mm-hmm. So he was kind of a niche, but you know, very well thought of. He actually worked at, he was for the first time ever, I had someone in my family working in the game industry other than my brother with me. And so he was actually working at Unity as a data analyst, and he got laid off amongst all the crazy layoff waves at Unity. Anyways, my point is bizarre. It's like there's two sides. There's the developers using it, and there's the corporate side of it. And there's like something really broken between the two of them, for sure, right? I know someone else that works at Unity too, and I definitely hear lots of chaos and stuff going on. Like just
well, and the yeah. Hilarious yeah. thing is that John Riccicello is yeah. out. The guy who came up with this yes. idea of, oh well, let's just bleed the entire
That's
game industry
out.
To death.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a track record of making really, really horrible decisions in gaming, and he keeps getting hired. Where can I find a job like that?
I know.
You know?
If you can,
talk about failing upwards.
Yeah, no, totally. You know, the corporate world's hard to understand sometimes, man. It's like, because in that world, it's all about things you and I don't give a crap about, right? It's all about I think most people care about things that actually matter, but there's some people in certain echelons in the financial world and the corporate high financial world that if you don't think like them, you're not even gonna get close to them in the first place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of like how you get into some of the high level schools. You have to start in order to get to the really high level schools and then do really good. And you have to start kind of acting the part. You have to sort of start, you know, conforming just a little bit, right? In order to be able to get yourself into the sort of higher levels, right?
Protective coloration, you know.
What's that? Sorry.
Yeah, protective camouflage.
Protective camouflage. Yes, exactly. And if you want to go that high, of course, you're also going to be surrounded by all kinds of snakes and political weasels and backstabbers, and you know, because they're all just out for themselves, right? In order to win at the corporate game, everybody has to demonstrate that they're out for themselves, only themselves.
Oh yeah, when I was working for Technicolor around 1990, the vice president of IT somehow got to his position and was making $250,000 a year, and I know because I saw the payroll, you know, because wow. I was working on, I was their first network administrator for Technicolor. And the guy was an idiot. I mean, I remember, we had a token ring network, you know, it was all ARCNET, 1.2 megabits per second. Horrible networking, but it was all we had. Anyway,
yeah.
He calls me into the office and he wants to know why he can't print anything on that work printer. And I asked him, well, you seem to be logged out here. When was the last time you logged in? And he said, oh, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago. Why?
What? What?
And this was the head
Yeah.
of the IT department.
What was he doing this time? Just screwing around?
He was busy making deals.
Oh, I see.
He was selling Technicolor services to other companies.
Oh, I see.
And I think that was his value. He was able to do that. But he didn't have the wherewithal to follow through, and he screwed up every project he touched.
Yeah, wow. And yet he persists, right? It's like these people, they understand their political situation. They can leverage it to be able to get what they want.
Yeah, this was back when prints were still, release prints were still being bicycled around, you know, physical prints from theater to theater.
Oh, yeah, and
we were doing software. We had software that tracked that. Uh-huh. And somehow they lost an entire truckload of prints of the Sister Act for New York. They never found the truck.
Weird.
An entire truckload of prints. And that's
strange.
Did
it not show in time or something? Was there a delay in New York because of that?
Yeah. Theaters went dark because no one knew who the prints were. And he did not lose his job over that.
Bizarre. They never did find the truck, eh? Just like poof, gone.
No, they never did. Poof, gone.
Did he make some kind of backroom deal, some kind of shady deal with someone to sell them or something?
I think it's more likely that they... that somebody did some data entry and created a virtual truck that didn't exist.
Oh, wow.
And then assigned a bunch of prints to it. And then where's the truck? There is no truck because somebody added one more truck than they actually had.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're right. That Occam's razor kind of does say
right.
That's probably right.
Yeah, that kind of screw up, you know, that's what we're talking about here
totally.
With the reaching.
Yeah. Human errors.
What the heck is his name? John Ricciatiello, former CEO of Electronic Arts, the former CEO of Unity. While he was running Electronic Arts, for 2 years running, it was voted the worst company in the United States. That takes some doing. Yeah. And to do it twice in a row?
Wow.
Yeah, so anyway, we're way off topic here. Sorry. So the whole, the touchstone there was the whole Unity 6 thing, and that there is going to be a Unity 6. And I think they've walked back all the weird licensing stuff that they were going to try to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but it's too late. Most serious developers have walked off the plank and jumped onto the
there was
Unreal
definitely a
Engine
point.
Now.
Yeah, all that huge event was a turning point for sure. Unreal is now climbing way ahead to be basically the king of all engines. Like, no question. Right?
Oh, yeah. That's
your question. Indeed. I guess Unity's in a great... Sorry, Epic's in a great position. It's still a private company. You know, you got Tim Sweeney still in charge of the whole thing, and I really I really like him, and he's got a good moral center and stuff, so I have a lot of hope. I'd love to see... The trajectory of Epic is very fun to watch. Let's put it that way. It's really, really good.
Oh, and the new Unreal Engine 5.4. Yeah, 5.4.
Yep.
They have this animation blending thing that's like, instead of doing animation in layers and programmatically selecting which one you need to do, it just has this library of animations that it knows about and just automatically picks the right keyframe that blends. It has pre-calculated every possible combination from all of the animations and picks the right keyframe on the fly, and you don't have to touch any of it now.
That does sound amazing. Yes.
And the results are so fluid and so natural, you'd swear you were watching a human being doing it.
No doubt.
Game-changing stuff.
Yes. No, I can't wait to work with a new project. Well... let's put it this way: a project that is using 5.3 or 5.4. But it's complicated. We've got this awesome code base that's primed to go to Unreal 5, right? There's a uh-huh. path there.
Yeah.
It's just time to take us there. But, mm-hmm. but yeah, we're shipping in 4.27 for now with the Consortium VR because it's a stable code base and it does everything that the game needs to do, right? We've taken up all the boxes of all the things we set out to do when we made this remaster, right? We yeah. don't want to delay it further by bringing it to 5 and have risked tons of delay. Oh, really, yeah. for not that much game, right?
It's feature creep is the biggest monster in the
industry.
Oh,
it really is.
Oh, my God.
And it's worse now than ever because it's so much easier to put in features, right? Back in the day, you know, it was a little easier to say, okay, this quality. But now it's like you can easily put something in and it takes 10 minutes to put something in, you know? But then it's like, oh, my God. Then it's like, oh, I got to put another one in. It's another 10 minutes. Oh, that's not bad. It's only 20 minutes. I got you. So that kind of gets – it's like a, you know, that's just a slippery slope. Let's put it that way, right?
Yeah, and then it has this yeah. avalanche effect because yes. every time you stick in some wild new thing – it touches everything else in the game.
Well,
and then it's just like...
That's, yeah, we try to avoid that. That knowing about regression, you know, and stuff, obviously, knowing how risky a change is obviously, you know, that's a whole other thing, obviously, for sure, right? And that's, yeah, that, but certainly when you're getting close to release, that's the sensitivity of that, what you just said, is very... all our dials are maxed out, right? In terms of whenever we're putting stuff into the game, we're extremely cautious. This doesn't have any chance whatsoever of breaking anything else, right? The answer is yes, we just won't do it. That's just how it gets cut. We don't do it at all, right?
Yeah,
where if it's
yeah.
something that's really, really easy and has zero chance of affecting anything else, yeah, we'll do it because it improves the player experience, right?
So we never okay. for if you're listening to this and you haven't heard of Consortium VR, go check it out on Steam. I realize we should have put this maybe at
or
the
MetaQuest,
beginning of the show.
Also MetaQuest. You can just check it out
yeah.
on our website.
Oh, yeah, MetaQuest.
The links are there. Yeah,
and it's one of those. 8 Men in a Submarine stories, except this in this case, it's a permanently airborne battle station, and you play one of the characters, and you interact with everybody as the plot unfolds, and the plot unfolds differently depending on how you treat the various characters, and you talk to them the way you would talk to a person, and it is the most immersive VR experience I can ever remember having, and I've been doing VR now for years. So that's what's going on. What are you doing now for the remastering? What's going into it?
Oh my God. I mean, we call it Consortium Remastered because it's a little complicated. The VR Consortium, it's all about Consortium VR. Like you said, that's really the crowning achievement, in my opinion, of what we're working on now is Consortium VR, unquestionably, because voice works really well in VR. It's a natural way. As Dean says, you just simply open up your, you simply just say the line you want to say. And the lines, you have choices in front of you, and you can sort of say half a line if you want to. You could make up your own parts and then just say some of the line. It's amazing how flexible it is. The system just kind of knows generally which one of them you said, if you say it a little bit similar. But anyways, it's in VR, it's like you're talking, it's like you, because you see people in front of you, you talk to them naturally. Now, Remastered is the original flat screen game, but it is the Consortium VR build, but just put back into pancake rather. It's smushed back into pancake mode, right? All squished, right? uh-huh. That's really the best way to put it. And honestly, playing it now, I realized, oh my God, this was never meant to be a flat screen game. It was always destined to be a VR game, and it should have never even been released as a flat screen game.
Well, was, you know, but...
No, you liked it. Now, mind you, 10 years ago, many people did like it, did appreciate it. Remember you told me when you recognized the game was hard sci-fi, and I was like, oh, I was so proud that you said, you took the time to say that to me. Because it made me so, it warmed my heart to hear you say that, because I was like, that's what I was setting out to do, right? I didn't want to make a thing that was too much, you know, fantasy. You know, as much as I love Star Trek, and I'm a hardcore Trekkie from the old days, you know, there's warping around in spaceships, you know, is not realistic at all, right? Neither is teleporting for that matter, right? Well, like
it's all science yeah. fantasy at that point.
It is at that point, exactly, yeah. And the reasons why those things exist is because Roddenberry had no choice because of the budget. He had to get creative, right? They had to, like, oh, he wanted to have shuttlecrafts, but no, they had to have a budget for that, so they needed to, you know, invent the idea of a transporter. Well, maybe in the future they'll have this, right? It's all done just because of the raw seat of his pants creativity stuff. And that's very similar to what we're doing here, right? I think in many ways, you know what? Last time I said something hyperbolic, and I wanted to make sure that I corrected it for this show. I said that playing Consortium VR is like stepping into a holodeck on the Galaxy-class starship, right?
Yeah.
And then you said, no, it's not too far from that. But I kind of immediately regretted saying that because it's not quite true. No, it's not true at all. I would say what is more true is that that Plane Consortium VR is like the very first scenario ever made for the very first holodeck ever created.
Yeah. I'd say that's probably right because, you know, you don't have haptic feedback when you touch objects.
Right.
Or any of that.
You can't just walk seamlessly in one direction without, you know, there's no automatic walking pad underneath you. You're still bound by the game mechanics of having to like either teleport or fly around the world, you know, if you can handle that. Right. And it takes VR legs to be able to handle that. So, minus those parts for sure. Although there's some really cool hardware coming down the pipe that might eventually fix that part.
I know what you're referring to. You're talking about the Disney,
Disney R&D thing. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, the Disney R&D thing from the same people that brought us those cute little BRD robots from Star Wars that are walking around in Black Spire right now. Comes an omnidirectional tread pad that's like made of little beads on the floor, and it can not only keep track of you as you walk in any direction, it can also move objects in any direction desired. You put an object on it and then tell it, okay, shift this thing this way, shift this thing that way, spin it around, and it'll do it. And it's
pretty awesome.
Previous iterations of VR technology for infinite walking or infinite running involve standing in what looks like an inverted 50-gallon drum head.
Yeah.
You know,
and the guardrails, all this stuff.
Yeah. And a strap to keep you, to hold you in one place as you try to run in this slippery darn thing. And it looks like the most unnatural sort of treadmill situation you can possibly imagine.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's not great. And this is way more advanced. And I am. We're not going to see this in our homes for maybe another 10 years, I don't think.
Right. I don't think so either. I think you're right. 10 years, we might start seeing
in 10 years,
VR
might.
Rooms. You know, there used to be home theater rooms. Now we're going to have there'll be VR setups for sure. The whole floor will be set decked up with one of these. Yeah, that's a holodeck, right? That literally, we're talking about a holodeck. So we're basically saying 10 years to holodeck version one, for real.
We'll have infinite travel.
Because if you just put a really high res VR deck over your head and you have this, the room could just be a whatever, it doesn't matter, right? You're not going to be ever hitting the wall, you'd be standing in the center, and then it'll be exactly like how the holodeck's supposed to work, right? The system was constantly pretending like you were going beyond the walls of the holodeck, it was constantly giving you illusions, right? You had this treadmill beneath you, and then the system was constantly making up stuff. And only if you brought something in from the outside world into the holodeck and threw it, it would actually hit the wall. And you'd see, that's how you'd see the wall. But if you threw anything holographic, it would look like it continues to fly through the wall, right?
Right.
Yeah, and it's really cool how they envisioned the holodeck, because that's exactly how VR works now. That's exactly how mixed reality works now. And it's like there's a direct correlation there, other than the treadmill thing. But as we've just discussed, that there is the actual tech that might solve this that exists. So it's really quite fascinating that in my lifetime, what we might get the holodeck. Because I remember, they said it was 100 years past Kirk's Enterprise time that they invented the holodeck, right? But we're going to invent it 10 years from now.
Yes, so, and like, no, it does turn up in an animated episode.
Oh, the holodeck does?
It
does.
They don't call it that, but there's a chamber in the Enterprise where.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
oh,
this is one of those little
The original series show, the original series cartoon, you mean?
Yeah.
The animated series from the 80s.
Yeah.
From
of
the 1970s.
The 70s.
Yeah, late 1970s, yeah.
Early. 73, 74.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Okay. Filmation.
Yes,
the one. But they had real writers writing it.
Yeah, and the actual actors stayed in the lines, right?
Yep.
You know, it's funny. I need to bring that series down and watch it with my family because it's worth it, right? There's actually some really good Star Trek stories in there, right? I remember writing it off when I was a kid.
You know, I was a teenager and there was never going to be any new Star Trek ever.
Right.
So in that, it wasn't so bad.
Right.
But it's still only like 22 minutes of story, and the animation, it's, think of it as an animatic.
It's okay. Yeah, that's probably why I dropped it when I was a kid. It's like,
refer to it later. You know, anything else you see with Spock refers to, elements of the first episode Yesteryear by Dorothy Fontana. So there
That's awesome. I love that. Yeah, I really miss the old crew. So I probably watch it now and nostalgia would just hit me. Just hearing all their voices, I'd be like, okay, I'm in. You know, I don't care what the animation's like. It's just, I'm in. Just like your productions, you guys, I don't know if you still do them or not, but you're really cool audio. You know, pure audio only radio show productions, right? So many cool creative stuff you guys have done. You guys still producing those, or is that?
It has been a while since we've done any of those.
We should start again. The problem is our best voice actors keep getting jobs.
Oh, bummer!
All the voice actors.
Good for them. Bummer for you guys.
Yeah, the voice actors that we used for that are now all SAG actors.
Oh wow!
So it's problematic in terms of
It's like they put this cool performance on, you have this cool thing, and then they get jobs from that, and then you lose them. It's like
it's not so much that it's the contractual thing, you know, because once they're SAG actors,
you know, we've only hired like non-union voice actors pretty much our entire. So I don't have experience dealing with union and stuff yet.
Will.
I remember that voice actor's workday was like 4 hours long tops because it really takes it out of you. And that they got like 600 for the day or something like that. And I have no idea what it is now because
they've just got a bunch of new contracts.
Yeah, that was 30 years ago. I hope it's more than that.
No, it is. The basic rate, actually, I know for sure, the basic rough rate for that amount of time would be around like $4,000 or $5,000 now, you know?
I wouldn't doubt that. There's been I'm getting a flurry of press releases on the new contracts dealing with new media. So, you know, they're thinking of it, you know?
Yeah, they're definitely putting it through the grinder to make sure that they do it right, because the industry is changing so fast because of AI.
Yeah, well, yeah, I was going to say AI would be a wonderful thing to discuss briefly with you guys, because it's awesome to see all the different ways it's being applied. We're using quite a bit to finish off the final polish pass. As a matter of fact, the lore console, you might remember in Consortium VR, accessible from the player's arm. You just go press a button and this big screen comes up and you have an entire lore console. It's sort of like an internet console into their world, but it's select articles. So there's like 260 articles.
Oh, wow.
And it's all been polished up. There's 180 full color images that we've used AI to create. That are the ideas that they're recreations of images that people in that world actually see on their internet. So they're like photos and they're drawings of people at that time in that universe, things like this. So it really brings to life the lore. If you start diving into the info console, and everything in there is, by the way, is connected to the story at large, connected to the people that are in the ship with you. Everybody has a backstory. The backstories have backstories. Backstories are all connected. There's just so many different, like the way our lore works is so many connections to everything else. Like every game is connected as well. Like every game we've ever made is all connected narratively. But they're all very different games at the same time, like dramatically different gameplay. But they're all connected narratively. So the info console, what's really cool is we're going to be releasing the info console for free by itself as a standalone app for Android phones and PC.
Wow.
So you'll be able to have that. You'll be able to have your phone up if you're playing and sort of like reference the info console whenever you want to. You don't have to like have it. You don't have to bring up the screen of the game or whatever, right? Yeah. So, or you can kick back and just read for a while and sort of immerse yourself a bit in the lore and then jump into the game, knowing you'll come to the table knowing a lot more and be able to make more informed decisions because you understand the universe and the characters and the situations much better than otherwise you wouldn't have if you jumped into it fresh. But at the same time, as Gene knows, there's plenty of options in there that tell you to say stuff like, I don't know what the hell's going on. What's happening? Who are you people? You can say that stuff literally to characters in the game, and they will respond in kind.
Okay.
AI is definitely is definitely a tool for expanding your reach. I mean, it's not, you can't just press a button and say, make my thing. That doesn't work.
No. Although certain parts of it do work. Like if there's stuff coming down the pipe where you can make like basically an empty box, and then you tell it to basically make that empty box look like a cyberpunk cityscape.
Uh huh.
Right. And then
yeah, but you better go have a look at it. You better go have a look at it when it's done, so to make sure that it doesn't do anything stupid.
Oh yeah, yeah. No question.
You know, I mean, like putting Playboy Bunny model silhouettes in every window.
Too many fingers, or gears that don't.
And limbs. Fingers. Yeah, it's limbs. Like, he loves adding limbs, doesn't it? He loves adding limbs.
Yeah, it's so does. It's like the rules for dealing with AI are very much like the rules for dealing with the Fae.
Yeah.
You know, check the knuckles, check the fingers, check the teeth. Don't trust anything you see.
It's like dealing with shape-shifting aliens, right? Who aren't quite clear on the matter of how many fingers humans have.
Indeed. It's almost like looking into the future. Are you guys going to be evolving into this eventually? They're guessing it. They're guessing future mutants or something.
Ooh, maybe.
Yeah, there is still a great deal of just blind rage on the internet about AI. And what it's doing to our creative society, and a lot of it is justified.
Yeah,
and it's I think what's going to happen is that we're going to be looking at AI the same way we looked at synthesizers for music back when those came out, when that stuff first came out around 1970.
Mm-hmm.
1974, the first Moog synthesizer came out.
Oh, they switched on Bach. Oh, my God. They're putting orchestras out of work. Well, no, actually, orchestras haven't been put out of work.
Yeah, that actually didn't happen.
Thankfully, yes.
But it did expand the reach of musicians to enable them to do things they would never have otherwise been able to do on their own. It doesn't replace talent, but it does amplify whatever talent you have.
But you better have some.
Yeah, but you better have some.
Yeah, I mean, a part of it from our perspective is what it actually does, and which is kind of what you just said, is it does enable small companies to make their give a lot more sheen and power to their productions than they otherwise might not have been able to do.
Yeah, right? it lets you punch above your weight is what it does.
Yeah, exactly. But I wanted to say that there's a really interesting parallel, speaking of AI, to Consortium VR, and that's that we've arrived where we arrived at with our game purely from human stuff. Like there's the only AI is in like the actual models that determine what the speech recognition models were generated with AI in the past. That's about the only way, but that's down the pipe, right? That's not really the point. The whole thing is human authored, right? Mm-hmm. And even the voice system doesn't require any online connection. It's not like it connects to a database and says, what did they say, and then comes back. No, it's all offline. But the AI, there's all these companies starting up that they're creating smart NPCs with AI. So they're creating trained models.
What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, well, you know, it's funny because I'm kind of sitting back and watching the whole thing unfold. And the thing is, I have the benefit of the experience of coming where we've come with where we are, with what we've got, and realizing that, you know, it takes a lot. It takes a lot of writing genius to be able to create an ensemble story of characters that have backstories that interact with each other and interact with you, and also part of a big, very firm actual story, like a cohesive narrative. Right,
darn straight it does.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing is that a lot of these AI researchers, the NPC smart researchers people, I think a lot of them are thinking they see these little glimmer because of these demos of what's possible, quote unquote. But then trying to actually get a practical model that can work within a story game is eluding them so far. Okay, it's just these little snippet demos where you can kind of walk up to an agent, say whatever you want, get some responses that, you know, sort of seem to make sense, and then you could go back and forth, and then you try to ask it questions that you think are relevant to what you think you're trying to do, and then it'll try its best to give a response to you, and then when it finds something that it wanted you to say, it'll engage and say something correct, and that's kind of where they're headed, right? But it's very uncontrolled, it's very chaos, you know, but I understand now, so clearly that is where it's going to be going, right?
Yeah, AI NPCs right now are still stochastic parrots.
Exactly.
And they are the problem with using them in games is that if you have a sufficiently advanced large language model at the back end driving it, it is liable to say anything. And what it offers may not be safe for children. It might not be appropriate politically. It could say something rude or insensitive regarding race, religion, or sexual orientation.
Oh, so basically it's like inviting your deranged uncle.
Yeah, exactly. It's like inviting your deranged uncle into your video game.
Yes. Now, the thing is that, of course, all these people know this, right? The researchers know this. Like, I know someone who working at NVIDIA, working on this problem as we speak, and I've got a little bit of insight into what his problems he's facing. And I raised this exact problem. It's like, you're going to hit this problem real quick, right? And he's like, yes, we recognize that's a problem. And, you know, so they're trying, and the other companies are all competing to reach the one that works, if you will. They're trying to implement guardrails, right, where the system is constantly watching for certain types of topics, and then it'll respond in a way that's like, oh yeah, I don't want to talk about that, or you know, maybe change the subject or something like that, right?
So the problem with the guardrails on AI so far is that with a little thought, you can easily hop over that guardrail, whatever it is, however big or complex the large language model is. The guardrails are only effective for people who aren't really pushing at them very hard.
Yeah, anything that man can create, man can mess up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Oh yeah. Sure. It's even the most sophisticated, even the newest AIs, like from OpenAI and Claude.ai, Claude, which right now is the leading large language model. It is childishly easy to jailbreak them. and these are the ones with the best guardrails in the industry, and they're still no match for a 14-year-old.
You know, absolutely. I think what the gaming center and startups are doing, though, is that they're creating their own trained models from scratch, right? They're training from scratch. They're training their own models that don't have any of the stuff they don't want. So it's 100% custom-trained agents. But that being said, there's still flaws, right? There's still the real flaw, in my opinion, has to do with the player has no idea what they're supposed to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like when you sit down and you engage with a game, you expect to be entertained by the game, right? To at least a certain extent, a little bit at least, right? So, one thing I've noticed, obviously, in a bajillions of games you played, it's entertaining to see a list of potential choices that you can make in order to see what will happen and what the other person will say, right? That's an entertaining thing. That's a fun choice, right? Games that constantly the interesting dialogue choices is fun, right? If you're just facing an empty prompt constantly and it's not clear what you're trying to accomplish, then it becomes very much like, what are we here to talk about? What am I going to say? Like this without the context, you know what I mean? It's going to really reach a point where they will fill all the gaps and they'll basically end up with something like what we've got. But this is why I'm like, I think that something you said, like a couple shows ago or something with regards to how we're the first at something, right? Ryan and I, and Steve, the team has patched together this thing, like pixel by pixel and like piece by piece. And like there's like an atomization going on, right? In terms of like how much we get out of the way of the player freedom, right? Mm-hmm. The player to be able to say things, not say things, walk away, not walk away, et cetera, et cetera. Just the core interface. And all, of course, using their own voice. So it makes it feel like it's actually them. So it's completely removing the avatar completely. And it's just you, right? You are the avatar, literally. Sorry, I forgot where I was going with this. My apologies.
We were talking about how placing boundaries on creative environments helps you make decisions about what to do next.
Right, exactly. I mean, the thing is that without context, then you're not going to have any idea to know what to talk about. So it'll probably be something along the lines of, and you're already seeing these kind of things, right? Where there's a dead body and then there's someone standing by it and you go, what happened here? It's an obvious question to ask, right? So the model will be trained to be able to handle those kind of questions very, very well. But of course, as you guys have just said, the person on the other side will get very creative. They have their entire vocabulary at their disposal. They can chain together sentences and things that will inarguably cause the other mob, the agent, to go, I have no idea, and just either deliver a generic response or deliver, say something really, really bizarre.
Yeah, right? and
it's forced to have to do a little bit of creative thinking and do a little bit of hallucination, which is okay. They want hallucination a little bit, right? Because then you get that's how you make it work, right? But then it says something that's totally out of context and totally breaks the world in the story.
Right.
Right?
And the reason it does this is because the AIs have a directive. The directive is to answer the question. That's the prime directive. The secondary directive is to answer the question correctly.
Yeah.
And totally. that's why they go off the rails all the time.
Yep.
All the time.
Yep. 100%. Because as long as they answer that question, it's like, oh my God, he knew what I said and he answered me. That's amazing. Right. That creates people thinking, but it's very surface level. Right. I think we vastly underestimate the how what it takes to come up with sentences and form language and communicate. You know what I mean? I'm thinking that AI can magically, because our society and corporate society and everything else is so surface level, right? It makes sense, mm-hmm. I guess, right? That it's like these surface level things will have such a huge impact. The cohesiveness, if it matters, if people care about having a cohesive story and a consistent world and things like that, right? Then AI is not going to be able to provide that for a long time, I don't think.
Well, I think the people behind Claude AI are probably getting closer. They recently did a series of benchmarks to figure out exactly how good their AI was, and they proved that it's more advanced and is capable of producing better and more coherent answers than their competitors. But an interesting thing happened while they were doing that. As they asked specific questions, the AI not only answered the questions correctly, but it also said, I think you're trying to test me. These are the kinds of questions you would ask an AI if you were trying to specifically test the AI. So it knew it was being tested.
Mm-hmm. Mm, like a Turing test type thing, which is
So this is
it's pretty cool. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah,
there's no doubt that we're gonna have. I mean, we already have. I know. It depends upon the level of complexity you're looking for in someone to talk to. But yeah, there's no question that the whole concept of having a virtual person friend, like having a custom bot that starts off in a like, very generic way, it's full of information, but that's it. But it's like it's going to imprint on a user kind of thing, mm-hmm. and imprints on a user, and then it's used to talking to that user, and then builds up a whole bunch of stuff based on the interaction with that user over time, over weeks, years. That's coming imminently.
Oh yeah,
no question.
Oh,
we're all going to have that. We're all going to have definitely some kind of personal companion bot, because it should be so stupid not to. It'll handle so much stuff for us really easily. Like it's there's definitely a whole. Whole series of technologies all converging at a very interesting spot.
Chat GPT is already doing that.
Right.
A new feature that they have just rolled out is it remembers previous conversations you have had with it.
Oh yeah, no,
and
of course,
remembers
yeah.
the and remembers does, the history. Yeah. yeah, the bot does, and it remembers the topical histories and gets to know you as a person, so that it can better answer the kinds of questions you have.
That's crazy. So see where that's heading. Where's that going to be in 4 or 5 years? Right. It's
oh
gonna
boy.
Be nuts.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens when they stick it in a physical humanoid robot.
Well, exactly. Right.
That helps,
which of course,
you know, that helps
right
around
now,
the house. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're doing that now, and the results have been amazing.
Absolutely.
One of the things that you're upgrading in the remastered version of Consortium VR is the display screens. You've added a whole bunch of animated display screens.
Oh yeah, we completely redesigned the interface completely from the ground up. In fact, you know, we basically trashed the entire user interface in the original game and just rethought it, reimagined the whole thing.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. It has a lot of the same information, but we've also sort of cut out stuff that we decided was not necessary for this very first story, mm-hmm. for this very first work. So that means that the inventory system is actually gone now. But you don't have. It's not like the original game, if you recall, had like a very Deus Ex-y inventory system where you click and drag thing and whatnot. Yeah, and you know, but you know, we know the work better now, and the work doesn't really require you to do inventory management. It just doesn't. So all the systems are there. All the science and the, you know, speculative science and the sci-fi and the whatnot stuff is all still there and functioning the same way, but it's like all automatic now, sort of automated. And players now have a much higher level control over their systems. So like healing systems, healing nanites and repair nanites, for instance, both they could be stopped or started by players, right? So they could decide if they can spare enough utility energy to heal or to repair their armor. Repairing armor takes way less utility energy than healing does, so you want to keep your armor in good repair and to avoid losing too much utility energy from having to pump medical nanites into your bloodstream, which is extremely energy intensive for them to function and do their job.
So it sounds like a lot of this is just quality of life improvements in terms of gameplay.
Yes, exactly. It's about trying to like make all the interface stuff be as far away from the player as possible. So you just simply play it, you experience the story, and you don't realize how complicated a thing you're in. Because you know, like the original game had like a whole keyboard worth of controls, right, to do all the things. Playing the game flat screen the flat screen does have still a lot of controls. You can still do a lot of those same things. But so it's a lot of stuff. But in VR, a lot of stuff's kind of handled for us. The presence of it's handled for us. You're in that world there. You're in that place, period, full stop. And so then we thought, you know, well, let's make use of VR. So we worked out how the player uses their arms fundamentally. So you have like an AR overlay over your left arm and your right arm that has a whole series of buttons and displays that you can interact directly with your other hand. So that's just how it works. You hold out your arm. So if you want to, you've got on your left hand, you have all the non-combat controls. So you have your information console, you have your career record, you have your, you can bring up the alignment screen, and a number of other things. Also, you could control your messages and to turn on the objective markers or not, and things like that, all on the left-hand screen. Just by basically using your right hand, you just take your finger and you press buttons. So it's just really, really like very intuitive. And then on your right hand is all the related to combat stuff. So this is your health and your armor and your weapon selection and be able to bring weapons into your hand. And of course, you know, the first-person combat works way, way, way better in VR. So we basically took Half-Life Alyx's system of selecting weapons and completely copied it. So that's effectively how you bring up different weapons. Uh-huh. You just press a button and then bring it up and it goes, and you just the weapon in your hand goes into your containment unit and another weapon goes out and gets formed into your hand immediately. So you can easily switch between weapons with that. But yeah, it's all everything's on your arms. That's it. It's all there. And then there are certain things. We've created a HUD system that do things to come up on your display. So the when you see a CMC, incoming CMC conversation, you'll see a thing pop up and things like that. But yeah, no, we really put a lot of thought into making sure that it's a truly native VR experience. And it's like it was designed from the ground up for VR, because honestly, it kind of was. You know, when I came up with the idea in my head, it was like I was imagining doing it myself. And of course, that's VR, right?
Right. So, So let's see. The 2D version, is the 2D version going to get retrofitted with some of these improvements? Or
well, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, so on release day, which by the way is Q2 2024. So as you might imagine, extremely soon. Like, you know,
which explains why you guys are in crunch time right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Correct. What were we just talking about? What was I answering for you? Sorry, I lost my train of thought again.
Yeah, the question was, are these improvements in Consortium VR going to be pressed back into the 2D version? I just installed it on my Steam Deck, and...
Yes, okay, so yes. I'm going to explain this. So Consortium VR has an actual 2D version built into it. So in Steam, you can just go, when you play, you'll have two options. You can say play Consortium Remastered non-VR or play Consortium VR, and you can just choose. And the save games are seamless. So you could like, and also it's 100% Steam Deck compatible too. Consortium VR is. You can play Consortium VR on your Steam Deck right now.
Oh, that's awesome. That's
totally
awesome.
So you could play in your Steam Deck and you can like do on a bus or whatever, and then you could go home and you could hop into VR and continue your story in VR. And then you can like continue that on the PC somewhere else. So the save games are interchangeable between VR and 2D, 100% interchangeable. So and the original game also will be available on launch day for way less money, right? So it'll just be called Consortium Remastered, and it won't have a VR mode, and it's just 2D. It's just and a cool kicker: everybody who owned the original game on Steam gets that for free.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
that's sweet. Okay.
I guess we better get the game, huh?
I have the game.
The remastered game?
No, I'm on the waiting list.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I've got the original one.
That means he has the playtest right now. Everybody who bought the original one also gets exclusive access to the actual Consortium remastered playtest, which has been invaluable because we've had tons of fans coming out of the woodwork to playtest our game and giving us awesome bugs. There's a bug reporter in game people have taken use of, and it's just awesome.
That's awesome.
What a great idea. Even in MetaQuest, someone could be on the MetaQuest playing the game in VR, and they can go to the bug reporter, fill out a bug report, it'll take a screenshot, and it'll email us directly to our bug database.
That is impressive.
Well, so you don't have to think too hard about remembering to write it down later and email it.
Exactly. Just goes right to our bug database, and then it shows up on our Slack at the same time. We have a Slack channel that says, so we've got this really neat, tight little pipeline there.
Okay, cool. That is instant gratification.
That's awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking to Gregory A. McMartin, the CEO of IDGI, and we've been talking about Consortium VR, the new remastered version that's going to be hitting Steam in like real soon now.
What time is it?
Second quarter 2024? That's
yes.
Not that's now. Far.
Yeah, that's now.
We're in that quarter.
Yeah.
That's not changing. This is not changing. We're definitely Q2 2024, 100%. Yeah, so we're weeks away from finally releasing this thing properly. 1.0.
Wow.
It's coming.
That's awesome. Yep. Anyway,
thank you.
Greg, thank you very much for joining us on this week's episode of the
thank
Event
you.
Horizon here on
awesome.
Sci-Fi.Radio. It's been great.
Been really fun.
And of course, you're always welcome back, you know, because we have great conversations when you do.
I can't wait till next time. So much fun.
And we're out. Awesome.
Clicky, clicky. Yep.
You have been listening to episode 273 of Sci-Fi.Radio's production of The Event Horizon for May the 4th, 2024. Happy Star Wars Day. Our guest this evening has been Gregory A. McMartin, president of Interdimensional Games Incorporated, here to talk to us about the remastering of their hit game Consortium VR and the state of artificial intelligence in the game industry as it stands today. This show will air again tomorrow, May 5th, 2024, at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, and again on the following Thursday and Saturday mornings at 4 a.m. Pacific, 7 a.m. Eastern. After all of the airtimes have passed, you will find this episode and others on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbay FM, Pandora, Stitcher, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and on our own website at sci-fi.radio. If you enjoyed the programming you have just heard, please consider visiting patreon.com/sci-fi-radio and become a patron of the station. We are listener-supported science fiction and fantasy fandom radio, and your contributions go to paying our DJs, our production team, the writers for our Geek News website, our production fees, our business operating fees, our music licensing, and a whole bunch more. And they help us procure and maintain the equipment and other resources that we need to stay on the air. We have been broadcasting continuously since 2009, and we are thankful for the support of listeners just like you. That URL is, again, patreon.com/sci-fi-radio. The Event Horizon on sci-fi.radio. It's sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. This program, copyright 2024 by Krypton Media Group.